Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to episode 11 of the Golf Advisor Podcast. I'm Golf Advisor senior writer Tim Gavrich. Today's episode is a special one. Golf Advisor editor-at-large Matt Janella has some breaking news from Oregon, where the Sheep Ranch is set to become the fifth big course at Bandon Dunes Golf Resort, owned by destination golf visionary Mike Kaiser. Sheep Ranch used to be a 13-green, free-form seaside links golf experience that not many people knew about, even though it was literally right next door to the resort. Bandon insiders used to rent it out for the day and zigzag across the property, making up holes as they went along. It was the definition of choose-your-own-adventure golf. The only drawback was that only a handful of golfers could be out there at a time in order to avoid confusion and danger from flying golf balls. That land is now being massaged by Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw. It's co-owned by Kaiser and a gentleman by the name of Phil Friedman. Friedman's name might not be familiar to you, but he was Mike Kaiser's longtime business partner in greeting cards before he got into golf. He is part of Bandon's secret recipe of success. On a recent fact-finding trip to Bandon Dunes, Matt Janella sat down with Friedman to talk about friendship, business, golf, and the next chapter at one of the world's most spectacular places to play. Hope you enjoy their conversation.
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning, they say. The first time you met Mike Kaiser was?
Probably freshman year at college. We were in the same dorm. I cannot remember the exact moment, but we lived in the same dorm all of freshman year and became acquainted and then friends.
What is your first memory of Mike Kaiser? What was your first impression, if you can recall?
Well, I'd like to say that I looked at him and I said to myself, this is a visionary to come. But more likely, I said, I think this guy's going to buy me a beer, which he did. And from that, we developed a strong and long and well-thirsted relationship.
What is the base of the relationship? What is the kind of core of love and respect?
From my point of view, because it's hard to keep, maybe harder to keep a business partner for 40, 50 years than it is to keep a family intact. And my point of view is the bottom line at the end of the day was that we may have disagreements, which of course we did, and you may even be upset about a thing or two, although it didn't happen often. But at the end of the day, the friendship was more important than the business. And whenever it got a little rocky, that's where I ended up.
If you got to certain points, you just defaulted back to the base of a friendship and worked back up from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of working back up, but yes,
yeah.
That got me, I won't speak for Mike, but that got me back to an even keel.
Is that also kind of the essence to the success of the partnership and the businesses?
I think it has to be, because if you're at odds with your partner, you know, nothing good is going to happen. All sorts of other problems will occur. So we had a rule in the card business was that we had to agree on everything. And if one guy didn't agree, that was the veto, and you just moved on. So most of the time, we would agree. If we didn't, we would try to talk it out. If we still didn't, we moved on to another topic. And it worked just fine. There were really nothing so big that it would interrupt the friendship. Friendship came first.
Where did this idea, who hatched and how did it hatch the idea of the recycled paper, greeting cards, and making that a business?
Well, the very first moment that it occurred is that Mike had been in the Navy and was married to his wife, Lindy, who Mike and I met at the exact same moment in time. And it is also Lindy's birthday today. Happy birthday, Lindy.
Wow.
Wish you were here, but I bet you're glad you're not. So we met.
It was her birthday?
Today is her birthday.
Yeah, but not on, you didn't meet her on her birthday.
No, we went over to Smith College and had the mugshot book and tried to call the two prettiest girls that we could find in the book. And one came down, both came down. One was Lindy, and that was it for Mike. It was really...
Wait a minute. You had the college yearbook, and you went through and tried to pick out the...
They have a freshman book that they show the incoming freshman class. And Mike, who you wouldn't suspect to be this randy old senior guy, and I, went over with the book and said, let's call her. So Lindy came down the stairs, and that was it. I mean, they have been really together, sort of like, you know, Trump coming down the escalator. Lindy coming down the stairs was the same sort of thing for Mike. And they've been together ever since. And today's her birthday.
That's amazing.
Isn't that something?
And you were there, you were witness.
Yeah, we went over.
Did you see this? You saw the sparks right there?
Well,
maybe it took 10 minutes.
Maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. Actually, by that evening, it was pretty clear.
So who knows Mike Kaiser better than you? Not many.
You know, Lindy.
Yeah.
But, you know, probably not Mindy. A story that I like about Mike, at least, is that he had graduated and was about to go off into the Navy. And Lindy was back home because she had been a freshman and going to be a sophomore. And Mike went back to her hometown, Rochester, New York. And here he is, he's got this nice degree, he's about to go into the Navy. And he's back there running an ice cream truck, selling ice cream to basically be around in the summertime. I mean, it's pretty sweet.
It's
sweeter than the ice cream.
Literally and figuratively, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So to get back to where we were out in Colorado. He was out there with Lindy. He had gotten out of the Navy. I had been doing something else in Puerto Rico, and we were all three going to go back to Puerto Rico together. They were in Vail, and I came out and joined them. And it was literally the last day of the season. We were about to leave. And we were just sitting around talking. And it was 1971, the year of the first Earth Day. So there was a lot of talk about ecology, a lot of talk about recycling. And Mike had a dream about recycled paper, if you can believe that. It really occurred. And we were talking.
It was literally a dream.
A dream. He does some of his best work at night. So we talked about what can you do with recycled paper? Because we were getting ready, but we had time before we were going to leave. And the thought was two things. One was school supplies, because we thought kids, college kids in particular, would support a product made out of something that was ecologically pure and good. And the other was Christmas cards, because of the feel-good combination between Christmas and ecology. That was kind of a good story. And we got ourselves so talked up that we went back to Chicago, which was my hometown, before we were going to leave for Puerto Rico, and said that we would just investigate it. We'd find out, you know, what the possibilities were. What we discovered was that school supplies is a low-margin, high-capital-cost business. Neither of us had any capital. So that was kind of ruled out. We really couldn't get into that business. The other was Christmas cards, greeting cards, and that was a lower cost of entry. And we thought we would pursue that for a little bit. So we pursued it. We met some artists, thanks to some very generous artists in Chicago, They donated their old Christmas cards that they had done for their friends to our cause. They fed us dinner because we didn't have any money. We'd drive around in this little VW bug, come to their house, have dinner, chat for a while, look at their Christmas cards, pick one or two. They'd say, take them, no charge. And off we went. And we took 17 of those to Marshall Fields and had Marshall Fields said, are you guys crazy? Are you nuts? This is terrible. What a bad idea. We would have been in Puerto Rico probably the next week. Instead, Marshall Fields says, we like the idea, but we need to actually see the product. And that's what got us started.
What was in Puerto Rico?
I had been in Puerto Rico before I came to visit them.
Were you developing, or what was your...
I've never really thought of it that way. I was developing, I guess. During the day, my job was to be the shovel man for a man by the name of Don Carlos, who was building a house about the size of that fireplace. I was labor, he was the boss, and then he would take me home and feed me lunch. In the afternoon, I switched to my afternoon job, which was running a sunfish boat operation in a little town as far away as you could get from San Juan in Puerto Rico. I never got back there.
Without Mike's dream and this conversation and all that took place, we might not have any of this.
I'd still be on the shovel.
Well, in a way, you kind of are back to the shovel. It brings us back to the sheep ranch. So let's now sort of transition to the game of golf. What's your relationship with the game of golf?
My principal relationship is frustration.
Me too. Beyond, we got that in common.
Beyond that, I think everybody has that in common. Yeah. No matter how well poorly you play. You can always do better, and you're always frustrated that you didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of watched from afar. Mike had been a golfer and was on the college golf team. I was on the college rugby team. I would come back bruised and broken into the spring from our spring training trips. Mike would come back fit and suntanned from his golf trip to Florida. I should have picked up on that earlier. I didn't. But he really did have a love of golf. And he looked all over the East Coast for a place to build a golf course.
You remember him kind of at the moment in which he became enamored with the idea of kind of developing golf.
I don't remember the exact moment, but yes, it had been a passion from the very early days that I've known him. And when we were starting the business together, you know, he would go off and he would look at real estate on the East Coast, trying to find the place to build this golf course. And because of the pricing and other things, and he was learning as he was doing it, nothing ever really happened. That would have been 10 years worth of looking. In the meantime, he was out here. He was doing Band and Dunes. He was getting started with looking at property. I'm sorry, I'm ahead of myself.
Yeah.
He got a call that said, we've got some interesting land out on the West Coast. And the interesting part about it to the realtor was that it was relatively inexpensive compared to what was being looked at on the East Coast. And Mike flew out to take a look at it, and there was nothing to see because it was all covered with gorse and trees.
Yeah.
Possibly why he doesn't care for gorse that much. he took a look at it. He saw through the bush. He saw the ground. He liked the price, and he bought the land. And that was the land that the original course, Band and Dunes, was developed on.
And you remember all of this. You remember, I mean, was he including you in these conversations or this process, or were you kind of just watching from afar?
Well, a little bit of both. Certainly I was watching from afar because this was his project. But again, our desks were right next to one another. So I was hearing about golf as I was hearing about paper cuts and recycling and the other stuff, you know, that he was involved in. And then the early trips that he made, he brought a group of what he, at the time I thought affectionately called, I didn't realize the greed that was involved in it. He called us retail golfers,
yeah.
who are the guys that were going to pay retail to come and walk around out here and have the time of their lives? So I was on a lot of those early trips. So I saw abandoned while there were still trees on it. And then subsequently, you know, we made some trips together prior to that to Scotland, to Ireland, and then again back out here as more of the courses were being developed.
And at what point did he really bring you in? At what point did you actually jump in from a commitment standpoint and say, I'm now a part of this?
Well, I think the commitment to the success of what he was doing was there from the get-go.
Yeah.
And I think early on, I may have provided a loan or two. And I'm glad you bring that up, Matt, because I better check to see if those loans were ever repaid.
Go through the books.
I better take a look at that.
Yeah, it's about time to go research that.
But no, it's remarkable what he's done out here, and it was, you know, his vision, and certainly I supported it, but this was really something that he wanted to do and did do. And then this land that we affectionately call the Sheep Ranch came onto the marketplace. It was owned by a couple of brothers that had timbered it, and there was covered with gorse. At one point, Pacific Gas and Electric owned the land, and they had erected windmills to harness the power of the wind in order to generate electricity. That did not work. That was a failed mission. So they've decided to move on, and they were selling that land. Mike and I took a look at it. It was located directly to the north of the northern boundary of the sheep ranch, of the abandoned dunes, Old MacDonald course. So this was probably 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 18 years ago. We bought that piece of land with the idea that we would do something golf with it.
And at that point, for you to now not only offer another set of eyes or your support or your, you know, your friendship as Mike was going along on this passion play, now do you remember having kind of any...
Yeah, I wrote a check.
Any sort of hesitations or do you remember excitement or enthusiasm to be a part of all this, or what was your feeling at that point?
Total excitement.
Yeah.
Total enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know, this sounded just great, and it was an opportunity for me because I wasn't as involved in the resort and the building of the resort day to day as Mike certainly was, that this was giving me a taste of that.
Yeah.
And it tasted great. So I was very excited about that.
Going back to your business philosophy and rules of engagement, you guys both had to agree, right? So obviously you were both on the same page as it related to this land and this price and this vision at that time. Is that true? At that time you guys were both?
We both had the same vision. Mike's vision was pay for half. My vision was, I'll pay for half.
and then we'll figure out it after that.
Totally. And we'll both own the property and we'll see what comes of it. And there were a number of different thoughts and ideas, but the main thrust back then was Mike developing the resort. And, you know, Abandoned Dunes was followed by Pacific Dunes, which was followed, I believe, by Trails, which was followed by Old MacDonald. And I'm sitting over in the corner going, anything next? And then it was the Punch Bowl and the sandbox, that's up in Wisconsin, but
Preserve. In 2012,
So there was one thing after another that was being developed, and it all made sense.
Yeah.
And the infrastructure was being developed, which all made sense. Which I was really not that impatient, because I was enjoying going over to the sheep ranch and walking around. And it got cleared at the end of Pacific. And Tom Doak, who is a brilliant designer, came over with Jim Urbina and put in some green sites that Tom and Mike and I walked around and said, boy, wouldn't it be nice if there were a green there? Yeah. So they put one in. And then it started to rain like crazy. It was November, and Tom and his crew left. And from that point on, we had what was known for about 15 years or more as the Sheep Ranch. It was 13 green sites, no route, no irrigation, except we would bring a fire truck full of water in, and we hooked up sprinklers around each of the green sites, and we'd irrigate the greens. So you could play if you weren't too put off by fairways that burned out in the summer. Kind of looked like, you know, what Ireland must have looked like 100 years ago. But when you got to the green, you had a reasonable putting surface. You could play the green.
And you were, here you were watching all of this happen, and you were very content kind of just having this be what it was.
I was totally content with that. I was enjoying the idea that this sheep ranch was a place that I could go and play in solitude or with friends, that we let some people come out and play. And it was really not until maybe 8-9 years later that we actually opened it up. If you could figure out how to find it, if you could figure out how to get a hold of the superintendent and that he'd agree to open the gate for you, you could come out with your buddies and you could bring some sandwiches and bring some beer, bring some whatever you wanted. And the place was yours for the day. You could go anywhere you want, you could create whatever route you want, and you could play from dawn to dusk.
An amazing concept, and a concept that a lot of people fell in love with, this idea that it was this deep, you know, Bandon Dunes has a lot of secrets and a lot of hidden little nooks and crannies to it that people like to sort of discover on their own. Sheep Ranch has been one of those things for a long time. I've been hearing about the Sheep Ranch, seeing people consume the property, rave about the moments or memories that they've made out there. But it's not a business model. You can't.
Well, it's a bad one.
It's a bad business. Yeah, true. Yeah, it's a business model, not one that shakes out. And a lot of people I've seen said, oh, I can't believe they're doing this to the Sheep Ranch. It was great. I wish they would keep it as is. But I think to myself, you can't have just one group out there hitting shots to different greens without any sense of where the next shot is going. It doesn't really make sense. So at some point, you made a decision to do something different.
Well, I was okay with sitting with it, and I was very okay with getting the feedback from the groups that did come out as to how much they enjoyed the experience. The experience wasn't just being able to go wherever you wanted. That was part of it, for sure. But the experience was having the day change 3 or 4 times on you while you were out there, having the fog roll in, getting to the coast, seeing the water, seeing the rocks. Being part of what I would call almost a mystical experience on that land. I thought that was just terrific, and I was enjoying it. And it was a little selfish, perhaps, but I had a good reason, because Mike was still developing more that needed to be developed at the resort. So we got to a point where it seemed like it was time. Although I look like I'm still in my late 20s, I was beginning to feel the
took
knees.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
I thought I did. The knees and the feet, and realizing that if this was going to come to fruition, that this could possibly be the best golf course at Bandon. And Bandon has got world-class 4 wonderful golf courses. And this is possibly the most interesting piece of links land of all of the land at Bandon. And that if I was going to do it, now is the time to do it. And that the folks that were going to say, boy, I liked it when I could go wherever I wanted, I believe are going to come out here and they're going to take a look at 9 absolutely stunning, breathtaking holes, greens, perched on the cliffs above the Pacific. 9 of them, and are going to say, it's better than it was before.
Gives me chills.
You get a chance to see that.
I can't wait. It's unbelievable. Talk to me a little bit a little bit more about the land. How many acres? What was the was this the original piece you bought? Did you guys have to buy a little more? What is it about this land that makes you so bullish about, you know, about this vision and the idea that this could be the best? You know, everybody ranks them differently, and the idea that some people are going to say the Sheep Ranch is my number one course at Bandon Dunes, that's a mind-boggling concept, but could very well be truth.
I think it could be. You know, it's certainly going to be fun to watch and see. We bought the whole piece of land at one time, and what we bought was 400 acres. So there's a tributary that runs into Whiskey Creek. And the challenge was to try to get everything on the western side of that ravine. It's a big ravine in some places, it's not much of one in other places. And, you know, we looked at various routings. We talked with wonderful, wonderful golf course architects. Tom, certainly being one of them, he did the original, as I said, 13. Gil Hance was out, he took a look at it. Great guy, would have done a wonderful job. But the dilemma was, how do you fit everything, if you can, on the western portion of the property so that you were in your face on the ocean the entire time that you were on there? And Bill Coor, who is an amazing guy, forget that he's an incredible architect, he came up with a routing that actually worked. And that's what we'll see out there today. That's what people, when they come to see the Sheep Ranch, will see. He's got all 18 holes and at least three different routings. So in fact, the Sheep Ranch going forward could be not one course, but it could be three different courses, and maybe more depending on the routing that day. So you could come to play the Sheep Ranch and you could play it 3 days in a row or three rounds in a row. In your case, you'll probably play all three on the same day, man.
In?
Yeah. And it could be, it, you know, it could be three different experiences.
Help me understand that. How, just by virtue of interchangeability of location of greens to tees and being able to walk from one place to another, or?
No change of the greens, no change of the tees. It's just the order in which you play the holes.
Okay.
And it works amazingly that there's at least two different routings. We think a third different routing, and there may even be a more than that, but at least two to three different routings that you could have that would offer same greens, same tees, but a different order in which you play them.
Kind of like that famous book series in which you picked your ending. You can pick a different ending, kind of a thing.
Yeah, except that Ken Nice, our superintendent, will have to be the guy picking.
Yeah.
Because he's got to make it work each day. So it's a little bit like when golfers could come here and pick their route, but because there's 18 holes and who knows how many groups out, you know, it's going to be a pre-chosen routing, but it can be different.
I spoke to Bill. Well, before we get onto that. Tell me a little bit about, I understand that you've done a lot of research. You've done due diligence. You've traveled the world. Not necessarily with the idea that you've wanted to play these great courses like some people go, you know, the big game hunters of golf, they want to say, I played that. From what I understand, you've done a lot of travel and looking at golf as a form of due diligence to understand not only who you wanted to build, but what you wanted them to build for you. Is that true?
It is true. A lot of it had to do with traveling with Mike when he was doing his Irish and Scottish tours with Bandon Resort in mind. So it was piggybacking on that for sure. And it was understanding better by going there. Because you see some Lynx golf in the US, but really the great, great courses over in Scotland and Ireland. You know, you see so much of it in a week or 2 weeks over there.
That's a big part of your influence?
Well, it's a big part, I think, of the influence of what was going to be done on this coastline.
Yeah.
Because the opportunity here, because of the coastline and the type of terrain, you know, it was there to be done.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to go to Scotland to have that experience. Wonderful to go to Scotland and have that experience, but you could do that here as well. And now you can do it on four and a half courses once the sheep ranch comes. One of those courses meanders a little bit inland.
Yeah.
But it's the sheep ranch doesn't meander anywhere but out towards the ocean and along the coast. So it's going to be, I think, the purest kind of lynx experience with a lot of wind on some days.
And I'm told no bunkers.
I'm forgetting the name of the guy. I should remember. Bill Coor. There's a quote that talked about when the perfect land and the perfect design come together, there will be no need for a sand trap. So the bunker areas are going to be all grass. There will
be no sand.
Huh?
Perry Maxwell?
I can tell you when I'm not under the pressure of this. I'll look it up.
So say the quote again one more time.
The contour of the land and the design of the architect requires that there not be any sand on the property. That all what you would think would be might be a bunker, in fact, is going to be grass. You might have the depression, but you're going to have grass. You're not playing out of sand bunkers.
Hallelujah.
Isn't that something?
I love this idea.
We don't believe that it's been done anywhere else. And part of it was Bill Coor and Ben Crenshaw, of course. But part of it was that the land lent itself to being able to do that.
And so isn't that a big part of what we're doing, right? Sort of listening to the land, right? Isn't that what part of what makes Bill and Ben so special is they kind of put their ear to the ground and let the land dictate a lot of what's happening.
Yes, and to that point, we had a couple of choices. One was to tear up what over 15 years was fairway, and it was, you know, every year it got a little bit better. Every year it would rain. Or we could keep it, and we could cut it up, and we could put a little seed on it, and basically keep what was there. And Bill, in particular, was insistent upon, let's try to keep it exactly as it is, because the natural contours, the natural roles, you can't recreate this. He said, I could try, and I could get it pretty well right, but we're going to lose some rolls, we're going to lose some bumps, we're going to lose some of that naturalness of what the land is currently and was before. Let's keep it. And we agreed to do that.
9 greens on the coastline.
Perched on the cliffs above the Pacific. Yeah. And the other 9 holes, if my math is right, have terrific, beautiful views of the ocean. So you're never not seeing the ocean on whatever hole you're on, but 9 of them brings you, you know, right out there to confront it head on.
I'm of the mind that Bill Coor will go down as number one. This team of Bill and Ben, their portfolio, their style, their system, their everything is what we will look back on 100 years from now and just, you know, appreciate and revere like we do the, you know, the Seth Rainers and C.B. McDonald's and the Alistair McKenzie's and Tilly.
Well, you know a lot more about golf and golf history than I do, but I would agree with you. I would absolutely agree with you that Bill is something very, very special, and he really loves the land. And he loves the commitment to the land, and he is a committed person to golf, completely.
Completely.
Very special guy.
Completely. Do you feel like waiting like you did, letting everything kind of breathe and settle and develop and seeing what you've seen and knowing what you know and having Bill and Ben see what they've seen and know what they know, and having Mike evolve as a developer, do you feel like this is kind of the alignment of a lot of stars and going back to sort of that moment in which you met Mike? This is kind of a culmination, a crescendo of all that you guys have created?
I'm sitting here thinking of the 4th of July with all those fireworks going off when you say that. Yeah, I would say that this is, it was worth waiting. It was a luxury not to be pressured not to wait. And I think by waiting, I got to meet Bill Coore, and he was the perfect guy to make this happen. And that it is, maybe the Sheep Ranch is a good example of the journey being maybe more important than the destination. That all of the things that you mentioned were part of the journey that's going to lead us to the finished Sheep Ranch.
Do we feel like this is the cherry on top of what has become golf's great banana split?
I would say yes. Definitively, I would say yes. And I'll only say that to date, Mike has not tried to argue that with me.
What do you and Mike argue about? What are the things that you know when you say something and do something, you know he's coming back at you from the other side of the table?
Well, gorse, which I love and he hates, and blind shots, which I like and he wants to see everything laid out there. Those have tended to be the two major things that we'll disagree on. And Bill Coore, who should be the referee, I don't know what we're paying him for, he steps back and says, you guys work that out. Let me know what you decide.
But what smart of him not to try to get in between this formula for success that you've had so long, which is at the end of the day, you have to both agree. Is that still being applied to what's happening at the Sheep Ranch?
You know, not as a hard and fast rule like we had in the greeting card company, but de facto on the land, that is what's happening. And believe it or not, he's right some of the time.
Oh, yes, he is. I've learned a long time ago that when it's all said and done, he's probably going to make the right decision. I've always said if I would ever do a book about Mike Kaiser, I would call it What Do We Think? The idea that he's willing, regardless of the amount of success he's had, to foster commentary and opinions from the people around him and ultimately arrive at his final decision. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's embraces the process. At the end of the day, he is each day more equipped to make the decision. He does make the decisions, but a lot of those decisions are based upon what other people are inputting.
What would he say, you know him as well as anybody, what would he say is your great assets in terms of leadership and business and decision making? What would he say you bring to the party?
I think that's a question for him. I would say that sometimes when somebody has been very successful, people will tell them things they want to hear, and he knows that that's not our relationship.
You're willing to tell him what he might not want to hear?
I'm willing to tell him what I think. He may or may not want to hear it. He may or may not believe it, but he's not going to get anything other than what I think.
More gorse, more blind shots.
Yeah, he talked me out of one blind shot. And I think he was right. Yeah. I think he was right.
What are we going to see out there today? What do you know, kind of walk me through this. Did he use 200 of the 400 acres? Did he, you know, is this going to be a par 70 or 73? Is this going to be a lot of half par? Do you know how many par? Is there six par threes? Is this?
It's a par 71. It's going to run about 7,000 yards. Most people, I think, should choose to play shorter. There will be multiple tees where you can pick the distance that you want. You know, are there half pars? Absolutely, there are half pars, and it depends on which way the wind's blowing. Wind is going to be a factor. You know, par four, going to be a par five, depending on the time of the year and the wind. And same thing with the reverse. There's in the winter, in the summertime, when the wind's coming out of the north, there's a couple of par threes where you better not land your ball on the green. You got to land your ball well before and let that ball run up onto the green.
Is there a golf course you've seen or a piece of land that you've walked or played on that reminds you of the Sheep Ranch? Is there something in your mind that stuck with you and you thought, this is an inspiration, this I want elements of this course into what we build at Bandon?
I think there are elements of a lot of different courses. You know, Royal County Down, there's nothing at the Sheep Ranch that's exactly Royal County Down, but it had so many wonderful golf holes. You know, that was an inspiration for sure. You know, some of the work already done here at Bandon, some of the holes, you know, at the resort. But there's not one course that this is supposed to look like. There's a lot of courses where I think the best elements of those courses have been incorporated into some of the holes. And then, you know, the knockout punch is really having so much of the play, you know, right on the edge of the land, teetering on the Pacific Ocean. That's the heart of the course. And Bill found that and built that.
What are you feeling right now? Here we are, maybe a couple weeks away from grassing some of this new routing, this new course, this new adventure, months away from some preview play, maybe a year away from full-blown green light, you know, drivers start your engines kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And there, you know, and you've got this built-in infrastructure and fan base and credibility and respect from your partner and Mike, your architects and Bill and Ben. What's going through your soul right now?
Well, earlier you asked what it was like early on, you know, when Mike and I bought the property together. And I think I said that it was exciting for me. It was an amazing experience because it was giving me an opportunity to be part of what has been going on here on this coast at Bandon Dunes. I'd say as we get closer to kickoff time, which is about a year from now, there's just more of that. It's so much more exciting today than it was back then, or it even was when the Sheep Ranch was this private enclave. Not that it was private, just nobody could get on it and knew about it. It is so much more exciting now to go out and see even roughed in these green surfaces without grass and the contour of the land and the routing as it's going to play. I can't wait.
I'm a new father, right? We talked a little bit about this, and I'm an older dad. I think to myself, you know, at 47, I think I'm sure glad I waited because I have more to give to offer my son. But I'm also, part of me wishes I would have done it sooner, so that I can have more time
to enjoy
with him. So there's you know, a double-edged sword of the situation.
Yeah.
Is it relatable to you to think that some part of you wishes, you know what, I wish we would have done this a little sooner because I would have had more time to enjoy it? And is there part of you also realizes we needed to wait, this is the right time for all the right reasons?
Well, I think when you do something that you love and it's exciting, you wish you had started earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
natural.
It's human nature.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, by definition, this is the right time. This is the journey that the sheep ranch was supposed to have, and therefore it's the journey that I was supposed to have with the sheep ranch. And would it have been fun 20 years ago to be off in, you know, tell me where, you know, northern Scotland, you know, fiddling around and building another course that's just terrific with a great architect and perfect land? Yes, but the journey is now.
I think part of Mike's brilliance, there's a lot of things, but it's been this slow trickle of development and evolution and addition to the product. So 99 Bandon, 2001 Pacific, 2005 Trails, 2010 Old Mac, 2012 Preserve, 2014 Punch Bowl. You know, this ability to have this kind of narrative within the world of golf and development and media and retail golfer, avid amateur, being able to say, oh, have you been since they added, have you, well, wait, you have to go back because now they, have you not played the, you know, this has been this narrative now for 20 years. He has commandeered the development narrative for 20 years. And people can kind of blip in there and do little things, but he comes right back with another card that's, and now he's dropping the ace of spades.
Well, and you know, I would include in that Sand Valley up in Wisconsin. I would include, Cabot. You know, Cabot Links and Cabot Barn Cliffs Boogle. And Barn Boogle down in town. I mean, pick the most difficult place to go to play golf that nobody would ever want to go to play golf.
Tasmania.
And
Inverness.
Tasmania is in the running, for sure.
And Inverness is not far behind.
And, you know, his overall philosophy is that if you pick the right land and you have great architects and you build something that is really world class on steroids in some cases, people are going to find it, golfers are going to find it, because they'll love it and they'll come. And that's been true on every project that he has done, whether it's here or anywhere else in the world.
You've been successful at business. You're a husband, father, grandfather. Now, where does the sheep ranch fit into your legacy? How much do you carve out of all that you've given to the world around you for what is going to be the sheep ranch?
I think time will better answer that. I think that in terms of what feels like one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done is clearly the sheep ranch. I think that it's going to have legs into the future. I think long after I'm gone, there will be people that will be out here appreciating it and playing it, not thinking about me or Mike or, you know, but enjoying what we've done. That was true in our business. I think people enjoyed what we did in our business, but there is something a little grittier and more real about doing it out here on the ocean, on the land.
And isn't it amazing that a place where so many people come with their best friends and congregate with their families, making memories, you know, at the heart of all of what's happening at the sheep ranch, is just two old college roommates creating something that could last, you know, beyond their lifetime.
Well, yeah, certainly it will. Certainly it will. Years ago, maybe 20 years ago, Mike and I went out to Cyprus, and we were supposed to play. At the time, I thought you had to play with a member out there. I'm not quite sure what happened, but we got there early in the morning, and they sent the two of us off by ourselves with a caddy, which seemingly, it seemed special.
And we,
we played, and we came in, and our member arrived. I think he was flying up from Southern California. And we had lunch together, and then we played it a second time with the member that afternoon. And I'll never forget the image, and I can't tell you which hole. It was hole on the backside. It was before those great finishing holes So one long one this way and one long one that way, and the sun was over there, so that was west. And we're walking down that fairway, and there are these two old guys, I can say that now, carrying their own bags, and they had this old dog with them. And I'll never forget, I stood there and I watched them, and it seemed to me, totally my story, I don't know if it's true or not, but I said, these two guys have been friends their whole lives, and they've come out here and played golf together their whole lives. And this is just an afternoon in their lives, and they're out carrying their own bags, maybe six clubs, and this old dog dragging along with them on the golf course. And it just was beautiful. It just felt right. Don't know if it's true. They may have hated each other.
Do you see you and Mike one day soon, strapping a carry bag and a couple clubs and going out and walking the sheep ranch together, just the two of you guys kind of enjoying the fruits of your labor?
I would say, I certainly hope so, but I'd say even back then, what I saw maybe was, you know, that vision of a relationship that had matured over years, of a love, a friendship, you know, I think that's what it represented
that
to
vision,
me.
That vision, that vision. You were peering into your future, essentially.
Future, maybe even present and past. Yeah. You know, there was a bond. You could see the bond. And they had a dog.
Well, everybody has to have a good dog. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, golf courses and friendship, Old Course, St. Andrews, the great municipals we have in America. You gotta welcome a dog.
Well, the dog for sure. I've got a dog that I almost renamed the sheep ranch the Poodle Farm. That good, and he almost looks like a sheep.
So the sheep ranch was almost called the Poodle Farm.
Well, I'm saying, in honor of my dog, maybe. But I'm trying to get a good camera angle on him so he looks like a sheep. But we can maybe still use him on a shirt or something.
It's going to be called the Sheep Ranch.
It is going to be called the Sheep Ranch. Probably the full name is the Bally Bandon, beautiful Bandon Sheep Ranch.
Bally Bandon, beautiful Sheep Ranch?
Well, Bally for beautiful. Beautiful, okay. Bandon Sheep Ranch. Bally Bandon Sheep Ranch, it will be called the Sheep Ranch.
Okay. Logos picked out and flags,
no,
and all that?
Open for suggestions. Mm. Send them on in. Sort of like the greeting card business. Send in whatever you think looks good, and we'll take a look at it. In the end of that business, Mike and I weren't drawing anything. We were doing a little writing, but basically we were editors, and we saw stuff that came at us, and we'd pick what we thought was pretty good.
How much time are you spending out there enjoying this, the building of the golf, the movement of dirt, the routing decisions of Bill and Ben?
More than I ever would have thought. And more rewarding than I would have thought that it would have been to see it, you know, even with dirt, begin to come together.
Yeah.
And to learn a little bit more about the infrastructure, which I didn't really, you know much about.
Right.
So I've been out there, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks early on with Bill, just walking around, trying to see his vision, being totally confused some of the time, but you know, now it's becoming more visual and more apparent to me what he was trying to do. So now I'm going to be, you know, out here every 2-3 weeks as we finish the project.
What's your family think about all this? What's your inner circle feel about all that's taking place out here? And you know, are they curious and excited? And
I think they're happy to see me doing something. And get out of the house would be my wife's point of view.
If but you're happy, they're happy.
Yeah, no, very, very supportive. I think they're all, when a couple of the kids were very young, they would come out with me in the summertime. They were like 8, 9 years old. And I would be tromping around on the sheep ranch and doing what I had to do. And they'd be down at a stable run by two of the employees that worked at Bandon at the time. They don't anymore. They've moved out of the area. So they go horseback riding and make cupcakes, and they just had the best time. And they'd be running around out here. So I'm excited for them to come out and see, you know, the finished project, as I am for all these many golfers that have been out and liked it the way it has been for the last 10 years. I think they're going to just, their socks are going to get blown off when they see what it's become.
Are you ready for all this? Are you ready to be this face and figure in the world of golf, you know, and have all the media onslaught and interviews and imagery and, you know, insight into who you are and what you are and what you've been and where you're going?
I have no idea, because that's not at all what I've keyed on. I'm keyed on getting this golf course done as perfectly as it can possibly be done. And all that other stuff will either work itself out, or if I find that I'm not very good at what you've just described, I know a guy, I got a partner who can handle that pretty well.
You got some pretty good backup.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
You got a good cut man in the corner, for sure.
For sure.
Well, if you're willing, I would love to go see this land with you that you're speaking so highly of. I'd love to get eyes on these greens that you're talking about, and maybe, you know, sort of walk around a little bit. Are you willing to show it to me?
Let's do that. Let's just do that. I think you're, you know, people have seen it, but the golf world hasn't seen it. So you'll be the first. And I think we should go do it while we still have pretty good light.
Enough talking. It's time to start walking.
Well, you got to walk the walk, don't you? We just talk the talk. Now let's see if it holds up out there.
Man, I'm so much better at the talking part. I'm terrible at the walking part.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
We'll see what you think once you see it.
Bill, thank you for
Matt,
your time.
Matt, what a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you.
Appreciate it. That was amazing.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, pleasure. I got to meet the Phil Freeman. I got to meet the man behind the curtain, the guy pulling all the levers at the what we're going to be able to play as the Sheep Ranch.
And I feel the same about you at Golf Channel. So this is probably bigger for me than it is for you.
I'm pulling something, but it's not any levers, that's for sure.
We'll go and enjoy the topography, the land.
Thanks. Let's do it.
Thanks.